Welcome to the Songs of Note podcast, where we talk about the songs we love and the stories behind them. I'm your host, Ryan Gregg.
Hey, this is Ryan. Thank you so much for joining me for the Songs of Note podcast, where we talk about songs and the stories behind songs and bands and artists. Something fun about the podcast has been getting in touch with new people and hear about other things around music. And so if you've listened before, you know that I've talked to some photographers, I've talked to some artists, some journalists. So it's just cool to talk about. It's still talking about music, but talking about it in a different way. And so today I'm talking with Mike Hipple, who released a book called Lived Through That, 90s Musicians Today. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll check. You know, I love the 90s bands. If you listen to this show at all, you know I probably have a 90s band problem because I love it so much. I still love old stuff and I still love current stuff too, but I mean, that was the stuff that I grew up on. So I was especially interested. So some of the people that Mike talked to and interviewed and did shoots of for this book included, I'm going to list some of these bands, Nirvana, I'm going to just list the bands. So it was Chris Novoselic, Arrested Development, Cherry Pop and Daddies, Marcy Playground, Modest Mouse, No Doubt, Presidents of the United States of America, Screamy Trees, Cracker, Harvey Danger, a ton of like cool bands and some of those names that I haven't heard in a long time. I was like, oh yeah, I want to know what's happening with them. So I thought this book was very cool and a cool idea. And he also has a podcast where he's interviewing the people that were guests in or that were featured inside the book. So this is an interview with Mike Hipple. The book is called Lived Through That, 90s Musicians Today. And this is our interview. Well, hey, Mike, thank you so much for taking time to come on the podcast today to chat.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I love the idea behind the book that you just put out, the Live Through That, the 90s Musicians Today. And as somebody who did live through the 90s, I had so many great memories looking through not only the photos of these bands, but being taken back to their music and what it meant to me. So I'm curious, because you have an 80s version of the 80s Redux book. Yes. I'm curious on when did you first get this idea of I'm going to do a book that sees where these people are at now? So I guess generally, how did you first get that idea?
Yeah, so it's kind of a little bit of a long story, but I'll try and make it short. And I'm going to start off with the birth of my daughter, and there is a point here. But so you know, when you first have kids, your whole life is revolved in this little tiny revolves around this little tiny bubble of life that you have. And after, you know, I've been doing commercial work, photography, so on and so forth for a while. Things kind of, you know, dropped off a little bit when the baby was born. And at a certain point, you know, life kind of opens up a little bit and you need kind of like a creative outlet. And so I just decided I was going to reach out to some of my creative heroes and just ask if they would let me take their portrait and just kind of, you know, talk to them and so on and so forth. And it wasn't musicians at first. It was more like writers and painters and artists, things like that.
Okay.
And I was really surprised by how many people said yes, right? Yeah. And then I did get a phone call from Valerie from a band called New Shoes, which is an 80s new wave band that had a big hit called I Can't Wait. And they were getting their band back together to do some of those 80s revival tours. And they wanted me to come down to Portland. I'm up here in Seattle to take some band shots of their new band. So I went down there. We got along great. And I took some great portraits. And as we were talking, just discovered that Portland was like this hotbed of 80s musicians for some reason. Like there was Martha Davis from the Motels, Tommy Two Tone, Bill from Animotion. So at that point, I was like, oh, maybe I could do some musicians, you know, because I wasn't really that well connected in the music world prior to, well, I'm still not. But so it just kind of started from there. And then I just continued, instead of just doing artists and writers and so on, I was like, I'm just going to focus on some 80s musicians because that was like the music that I grew up on. And after a certain point, it just became like, this could be a good book. I'd be really interested in this book.
Oh, interesting.
It just kind of came together organically. It wasn't necessarily super planned. The 90s book was definitely more of a plan because, you know, once the 80s was done, I wanted to continue the project, and it was just seemed a natural progression to move on to the 90s.
And you currently live in Seattle. Did you live there in the 90s?
I did, actually. I moved here in 93, January of 93. So it was kind of, you know, Nirvana came out in 91. Yeah. And it was still big. You know, it was still a scene. I wasn't necessarily a huge part of that scene. I had just moved into town. And Seattle had a lot of energy at that time. It was a scrappy little town. not the shiny, bright technology object it is today.
But. Right. I'm curious because I always wondered this. You know, I was in like junior high and high school when these grunge bands were coming out. That it was just all I was listening to. And you know, you've got some grunge bands on here, but you have all kinds of different 90s music musicians. But I'm curious, being in Seattle, even if you weren't connected to the scene, like, did you feel a part of the thing that was happening nationwide? Like, it seems like there was so much attention on that one spot. I wondered if people who live there felt that, or if you felt like you were observing, like it could be anywhere. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like I said, you could feel the energy about it, but I did feel kind of on the outside of it. I was really brand new to town. There's this thing in Seattle we call the Seattle Freeze, where people are very nice to you on the surface, but they're really hard to get to know. Mm-hmm. And it's a myth and a stereotype, but it is kind of true. It's really hard to break in. It took me a while to feel comfortable in Seattle. Seattle is a welcoming place, but it's hard to make deep relationships sometimes. And I don't know if that's just because it's rainy half the year and people kind of cloister themselves off, or I don't know, but it's a hard scene to break into.
Interesting. Well, so I'm curious. So after you released the 80s book, where and you released it and you had probably takeaways from that, I'm curious, how did that make you approach the 90s book differently? Were the things you thought, oh, I could have done that better, or I'm going to do this differently because of the 80s book?
Well, the one thing that I wanted to do different on a 90s book than I did in the 80s book, that I'm a huge music fan. I'm a huge music nerd. I like all sorts of music. But the thing that struck me on the 80s book is I would put it out and people would be like, I'm not really sure who that band is. And in my head, I'm like, well, I think if you heard song whatever, you would probably recognize it and you would know right away. You might not just be able to place it together.
Okay.
So in the 90s book, what I really wanted to do is kind of take that and kind of give the reader, you know, if they haven't heard of the band, give them a jumping off point. So I do include like a sidebar of some of the better songs to listen to, in my opinion, songs that I really like and enjoy. And just to kind of give the reader like, oh, I think I know this band, but what are some good songs? Where's a good place to start? Because some of these bands have really extensive catalogs amongst different bands and so on and so forth. So I just wanted to kind of give them a jumping off point, because one of the things I did know that some of the artists that I was selecting were kind of, you know, deeper cuts, let's say. Yeah. But I wanted to introduce the reader to them, because I think, you know, if you liked Nirvana, you might like this band. If you like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
So something a little different, and just wanted to give readers a place to start. Everybody has Spotify now, or Apple Music or whatever. So you can, you know, you can listen to it without necessarily having the commitment of purchasing something, I guess. I just wanted to kind of give people a jumping off point on this one, just to kind of make them feel a little bit more involved in it, I guess.
No, I love it. I mean, that's really like the heart of what I love doing on the podcast too, is trying to find out, you know, new music and introduce people to new music, and also find out the stories behind songs that people already know. And I'm curious on the way that you would set these interviews up, and I'm going to ask you about our interviews, your shoots. I'm going to ask you about some specific ones in a minute, but I like how you have like a whole written section about each one. And I'm curious, how did a typical shoot go? Would you interview them, or would you do the shoot, or like would you just write about them? How did that end up going?
So I would just reach out to the artist, first of all, and we would arrange a time and a place. If I was going to be in a certain city like London or Los Angeles, you know, I'd make it clear I'm going to be in this area from X time to X time. Let's try and find some time. All of the artists were very gracious with their time with me. Some had more time than others. And it really was kind of just a casual kind of thing. Like I would show up at their house or studio or wherever we were agreeing to do it. And we would just kind of go from there, you know, like with Chris Novoselic from Nirvana, he lives outside of Seattle about 2 hours. But I went down there and we just kind of, I spent the day there basically. So we just kind of hung out, talked, chatted, took pictures, talked some more. It was really casual, right? It was just really kind of going with the flow and seeing what happened. At a certain point, I did have to kind of, you know, let's sit down and record our conversation, you know?
Okay.
But it gave me a good point to, you know, good vibe for what kind of questions to ask.
Yeah.
So the questions that would be on the record, basically. And you know, other people, you know, some of the artists were just bands that were coming through town. So I would have less time with them.
Mm-hmm.
But the priority would be to shoot the photo. And then we would usually have telephone conversations later. And sometimes that happened too, when I would go on location with somebody, they were in the middle of doing some other stuff or whatever. So they would take time out. We would hang out and take pictures, but we would just follow up later with a phone call to get the interview part.
Nice. Well, I'd love to ask you about the Chris shoot, him being from Nirvana, and which is just such a huge band. I like that you said that he and his brother owned a building and he works on cars. And you had some of the photos are with him with cars, which is something I never knew. Were there other things y'all talked about that stuck out or that you found out for the first time about him or that you found interesting? I know you mentioned he was a huge person, right?
Yes. He's very tall, obviously. But you know, so I was very excited to get the opportunity to work with him on that, on the book. Because up until that point, up until we got his shoot scheduled, I was kind of having some difficulty getting some artists together. And it seemed like, you know, my jumping off point for the book is artists that I like and enjoy and want to, and I'm genuinely curious about where they're at today and what they're doing. And I was kind of having a hard time getting some traction on that stuff. Mm. And I knew that I wanted to get, you know, Chris in there because he is from Seattle, right?
Right.
And then randomly, somebody else had called me to photograph him for a political project that they were working on. So I got to meet him at that point, and he took my card and wanted to know if I wanted to photograph his new band, Giants in the Trees.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I was like, yes, I'd love to do that, but maybe I could take your portrait for this book too. So he totally agreed with that. I went down there, and he's a super nice guy, super tall. And you would think like he has this like legendary status about him, but he's so down to earth. And you know, he has this building. He's very active in the community down there. He's a participant in the Grange, which is a kind of an agricultural brotherhood kind of thing. But that's how he met his bandmates in Giants in the Trees, just kind of a jam session there. Another interesting, crazy thing that I was unaware of is that he's a pilot. So yes, I know. He's got a pilot license and a little plane. And I guess he and his wife will fly down to LA for things sometimes. And but yeah, you would totally not. He's a very unassuming, quiet, nice guy, right? Yeah. Just a genuinely nice guy. Just has a good vibe about him. And it was just a fun day. You know, like we hung out in the morning. We photographed. The area that he lives in has like little to no cell reception. So there's like no distractions. It's amazing. It was a beautiful, beautiful day.
No, that's great. I mean, I love that. I love it. Okay. So you've interviewed a bunch of bands that I really like. I'm curious more, instead of me listing them, which ones come to mind to you as being, was there anything interesting from the shoots, or were there ones that stuck out, as being special from the ones that you include in the book?
Yeah. Let me see here. Well, there's Danbert Nobican from Chumbawamba. So that I was going to London, and, so I thought, oh, if they're a British band, I definitely want to kind of see what's up with them. And then in my research, I discovered that he lives in this tiny, tiny town, not that far from me in Seattle. And it's one of my favorite places on the planet, a town called Twisp.
Huh.
So it was very unusual to go up there, and the light is so amazing up there. And I was very excited to shoot his portrait. And he came out and he was wearing a skirt, and you just, you know, it was perfect. Another great one that I was Tanya Donnelly from Belly.
Mm.
I I love that band. I love all the bands she's been in, from Throwing Muses to Belly to her solo work. Mm. And I was a little bit starstruck, I'm not going to lie. I try and be very professional in these things. But I was a little starstruck. And when I was listening back to the interview, I could hear myself stammering a little bit in the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, she's a super, super sweet person. And when we were laying out the book, I just wish I had spent more time getting a couple of other photos of her for that, just because it was just a great opportunity to meet her. Another idol of mine that I was very excited to meet was Mickey Brenny from Lush, okay. Another band that I've always loved from that time period. Nice. And she agreed to shoot, but she was going to be in this place called Brighton, which is south of London, about maybe like an hour and a half train ride, not that far. And I was excited because it was this beach town. And I felt like I could find some really, really great locations for that. So I got down there several hours early. I'm kind of scouting out the place because you want to be prepared when the artist comes.
Right.
It was a weird, weird day. It was kind of cold and rainy, and then the rain would stop, and it would be bright and hot and sunny. No good light. The wind was crazy. I'm like, oh my gosh, this isn't going to work. There was a film festival or something in town, so I couldn't book a studio anywhere to save my life, because I was like, I need some kind of protection from the wind, and I need to create my own light. So that was problematic. And then so I'm just freaking out, and like all the hotels would not let me use any of their rooms or anything like that.
Man.
So I'm like, oh geez, what am I going to do? And I'm just walking around, trying to find a good spot. And I saw this old building with a door open at the bottom. And I'm like, what's that? What's in there? So I poked my head in there, and I saw this like amazing wall. It was kind of like decrepit a little bit, but kind of like gothy, interesting looking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is the location. And just as I was thinking that, the alarm goes off, and this like computerized voice goes, you must exit the building immediately or I'm calling security. And I'm like, okay, so I'm just going to wait here. I'm going to wait for security to come, and then I'm going to ask permission to use the space. Uh-huh. So I sat there, and this like loud alarm, this electronic voice going off, but nobody ever showed up ever. So I left and I came back and I set it off again. Nobody came. I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm sorry. I'm not sure if I can swear, but I'm like, what am I supposed to do? This is the perfect location. And so anyway, I'm just like, I'm just going to go with this. We're going to come back here. I'm going to explain the situation, and we're just going to do it. We're just going to do it guerrilla style. So I meet her. I decide we should just we have some tea. We have our conversation first. We kind of chat and talk, and I explain the situation. We walk over, and there's this large guy standing outside the doorway, and he's got this big grin on his face, like he's expecting us, right? And I'm like, oh hey, can we use this space? And everything was fine. And it was great, and he had no idea. And it was fantastic, and I was very excited about that location. And it's a long story for.
I know, that's good. I thought you were going to say you ran in and took a photo with the alarm going off.
No, but that was going to be the initial plan, and I was warning Mickey in advance. I'm like, okay, so there's going to be this loud computerized voice, but nobody's going to show up. I sat in there for 20 minutes waiting, and nothing happened.
Look relaxed. I'm going to take your photo. That's funny. Well, I love that's awesome. I love that you also had Adrian Young from No Doubt, who is just seems like such a big, larger than life character, and I like the photo. It was real, real bright. What was he like?
He was great. He was great. He was one of the very last people that we photographed because I had a trip planned to LA for I think March 17th of the pandemic year.
Oh man!
And like 2 days before I was supposed to fly out, like we didn't know if this was a big deal. We didn't know what was going on with the pandemic. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was nervous about it. I'm like, should I go? Should I not go? And I'm like, I'm just gonna go. And then the schools all shut down, and I'm like, oh yeah, there's no way I can go
back. Right.
So I canceled that shoot, and Adrian was in scheduled to be on that thing, and Rob Zabrecki from Possum Dixon, and a couple other people from LA that I really wanted to have in the book. So we kind of held off for that year of the pandemic, just trying to see what was going to happen. And I finally went down in April, I think, of this year, and we got those last shoots done. Again, super nice guy. Very willing and playful and just willing to do anything, which was so fun. Because sometimes people are a little hesitant, you know, like, hey, we've got, you have this giant rubber ducky thing, let's like photograph with that, you know. But he was totally into it and totally into making a good picture. So
I love it.
Yeah. His son was like photo assisting for us. Was like in the background. So it was awesome. It was a good day.
Had you seen any of these bands in concert, like ever back in the day that you were photographing for the book?
I have seen, who have I seen? I've seen the Posies. I saw Chibo Matto. I've seen the Dandy Warhols. I've seen the Presidents of the United States a bunch of times when I was in Seattle, because they were big just before they had a big record deal. And they were always so fun to go. Like, if they were playing somewhere, you'd want to go see them because they were just put on such a good show. I know I've seen Lush before as well. Nice. So yeah, I've seen a bunch of these bands.
I don't think I've ever seen a live clip of the Presidents of the United States of America, but I would have just assumed that those shows are really fun based on, I don't know if I've seen live photos or what, but it seems like they'd be a fun show.
They were so great. They were so much fun and just awesome. And the crowds were always awesome. And, you know, I had seen them in smaller clubs here in Seattle. And it was just, they just put on a fun, fun show. And now, you know, Chris Ballew, he does this act called Casper Baby Pants, where he performs as for kids. And I've seen him a bunch of times with my kids, and he's fantastic.
So. Well, I love that you had Arrested Development in there too, because I loved that back in the day. It was so good.
I know.
So that was cool. How did that get set up?
I was in Atlanta shooting some other stuff, and I, again, you know, the jumping off point for the book was artists that I like or have some kind of connection to, and so I just reached out, and he said yes, and you know, he runs this little school for kids down there, and we met there.
Right?
Yeah, so he helps teach kids, gives teenagers a place to come learn about the music business or painting and art and filmmaking. So it's a little place that's outside Atlanta, maybe about 20 minutes, something like that. But he and his wife run it, and it's just an amazing space. And that's where we shot the photo. And he's just a really nice human being in general. And again, another one of those bands that are just still producing some really good music, you know?
That is awesome.
So, yeah.
Well, what about, I saw you had photographed Adam Schlesinger, who ended up passing away back in 2020. How did you get connected with him? And when did that shoot end up happening?
Yes. So that was, I really, really wanted to get Adam in the book. He's so integral to that, to several of the bands that I really liked in that time period, Fountains of Wayne and Ivy. And I was having really hard time finding contact information. But I was photographing Ivy in New York, and I had asked, you know, about shooting Adam, and Dominique was like, oh yeah, sure. Let me connect you with him. You know, we had a bunch of phone calls and emails, and we were not going to be in the same city at the same time because he was between New York and LA. And then it just worked out that I was in LA, the November of 2019. And he was going to be there with a band that he was, currently working with called Fever High, which, if you like, early Bananarama, like Cruel Summer kind of stuff, like you should definitely check out Fever High because they're awesome. But he was performing with them, and he's like, yeah, just meet me at this place in Hollywood and we'll go from there. And again, super genuine, nice guy. He was working a lot with that band that day. So we had about an hour to shoot, to make the photo happen. And, so I'm like, I'll just call later. We'll just have the interview later. And we probably had the interview, I think in probably January of 2020. Not too long before all this stuff happened and Brittany passed away in April. But yeah, it was like, you know, he passed away, I think April 1st of 2020. And, I remember hearing about it, and it was really hard because it was like, I didn't really know the guy. I had, you know, some phone calls and we hung out for an afternoon, but I just felt really, really connected to that for some reason. And it really brought home the seriousness with which was happening at that time. And, you know, it's the first person that I actually physically knew that passed away from COVID.
Yeah.
But, But yeah, it was that was challenging, and we lost a great one there.
Mm. Well, I'm curious for the amount of bands I'm guessing you reached out to. So I'm asking this more in solidarity. I've reached yes. out to so many people for interviews on my show, and there's so many, so much rejection or so much no response. What was the rate? If you had to guess,
of like what you're talking about,
people who said yes compared to people you asked, was it like 3-1?
I've got about 43 people in the book, and I probably reached out to maybe, 300-350 people.
I'm feeling better. That's about my rate.
and then there were even some that said yes, and I would show up, and it wouldn't happen for whatever reason. So there were a handful of those that happened, and those were difficult because it's like, oh, you're so close,
And you get your hopes up. I won't say who I won't say who's confirmed for my show, but I've had a couple like really big name musicians who said yes, and then it came back no. like, oh, I was so looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But I love, unrelated to that, I love that I saw you're doing a podcast with this as well. So can you talk a little bit about the podcast, and did you record the episodes when you were doing the initial interview to get to know them, or was this after the fact, or how did that get set up?
Yeah, well, I'm a huge podcast junkie. I love podcasts, and I never really thought about doing my own podcast. But the book was done, and we're in COVID land, and still kind of sheltered in place, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I was kind of trying to think, what can I do next? And I really enjoy a lot of these artists, and they have more stories to tell, right? So I decided I'm just gonna, do a podcast and start. I started brand new. I started with a different kind of approach. This book is about like the things that they're doing now, right? Mm-hmm. And showing that they're still relevant artists. But the thing with the podcast that I wanted to do is I kind of wanted to like just take one story of like a pivotal moment in their life and just kind of go with that, right? And see how that changed the direction of their life. And it didn't necessarily have to be musically related, though a bunch of them are related to that. But, I have Rob Zabrecki talking about a cure for warts that he had on his hands, which is a great story. And I had, Tanya Donnelly, she was talking about a car crash that she was in that kind of changed, some perspective on stuff. And Sean Dixon from the Soup Dragons talking about, the transition to being famous. And then also later after the breakup of the band, his journey in coming out as a gay man. So they run the gamut from funny to really serious. And I think I've got maybe 7 or 8 in the can. And we'll see how it goes. I'd love to do more. But they're really fun, and they're all brand new stories. And check that out. That's going to launch here October 12th, and hopefully have every episode. Well, I will have episodes out every Tuesday.
That's awesome. Okay.
Not to compete with you.
And it's called Live Through That. That's the name of the podcast, right?
Okay. Yes.
Do you find, this is just a general observation, don't you find, because I feel like we're getting along, you seem very normal. Hopefully I seem normal. Don't you find that like once somebody can verify, oh, you're a normal person, I'm more than willing to like talk to you or give you more time, or it's just breaking through the initial like introduction that you're not just somebody coming through the internet that has no connection to. I don't know. There's some element of like once somebody actually gets who you are. Oh, yeah. Sure.
I'll say, from all the people that I've spoken with on the book, I will say probably 90% of them come at you with already like a genuineness, like you're a friend. You know what I'm saying? They're very warm and genuine people. And that's been my experience with the 80s book too. There's like, you get a little nervous thinking that they're going to be diva-esque or whatever, but I really haven't had that experience.
That's awesome.
Some of the people do come at you a little bit more guarded, which is to be expected. I don't blame them on that, but really for the most part, people come at you so friendly and genuine and open. And if they're going to do this and open up their homes to me, do you know what I mean? I literally come to some of these people's houses.
Yeah.
They just are warm and trusting. And, and know that I'm, you know, a normal person. Though the other 250 people who said no or three, who didn't even respond to me,
they didn't know how nice you were. That's awesome. Well, for people listening, you can check out the book, and the link is going to be in the show notes, and it's hiphipphoto.com, and that'll give you the link to where you can buy it at all the places. It's a really cool book and really cool idea behind it. Mike, really appreciate you coming on the show to chat today, and just wish you the best with your book and with your future books.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Songs of Note podcast. Be sure and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. See you next time.